Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this meeting of ASEF. We don't have an administrative session this time, but I would like to take this opportunity to welcome in our midst Dr. Ji-in Jang, Chairman of the Korean Accounting Standards Board and also Chairman of the AOSSG, and you are here in your capacity as representing the AOSSG. Ji-in has had a very long and outstanding career in academics. He decided late in his career to join the standard-setting community, and I'm sure we can use his accumulated wisdom very much. So welcome. Also welcome to Jim Croker, who is here for the first time. We're going to start with what I thought was a really interesting paper on the problems that language can cause. And when I went through the paper, I got the idea, well, even if we didn't have translation, we have some homework to do with all the words that we have for probable and possibly and et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to have a presentation from Seoul and from Australia, I believe. So I'd like to give the floor to Eric Lee, who joins us from Seoul. Welcome, Eric. Can you hear me?
Good morning.
Good morning.
To London.
Yes. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Morning. Good morning to all the members of ASEF. I hope you can hear me. If you can't hear me, please do let me know. Thank you once again for giving us the opportunity to present the preliminary results of our projects in the ASEF meeting. We greatly appreciate for this time. I would also like to take this opportunity to quickly thank the Accounting Standards Board for inviting us to take part of this project. When the CASB invited us to be part of this project, we were utterly excited because we found out that they are really interested to look at terms of likelihood. And we knew that there were concerns about terms of likelihood. And this is not a new topic. It had been discussed in the accounting literature for more than a decade. But we think it is important to revisit this issue, given that the objective of IFRS is to enhance comparability of financial statements across countries, and little has been done from the standard setters on addressing the concerns of terms of likelihood. But before I go on, I would like to invite you to do a quick exercise on how we interpret terms of likelihood. I believe you have the printed copy of the slides. If I can draw your attention to slide 5, there are 9 terms of likelihood listed on the slide. These are the terms we have chosen out of, I believe, more than 35 terms of likelihood standards. So what we have here are likely, remote, unlikely, probable, extremely unlikely, virtually certain, highly probable, reasonably certain, and also highly unlikely. Now, could I suggest I'll give you about 1 to 2 minutes and invite you to think about how these terms should be ranked. Perhaps the highest probability of likelihood be on the top of the rank, and the less. Of probability next to each of the terms of likelihood. For example, if you think highly unlikely should be 5%, then put 5% next to highly unlikely. Once you're ready, I'll then proceed with the presentation.
Making the slide. there's just too many things we could easily do with five. Likely and probable are the same. And I don't think we need extremely unlikely and remote.
Okay. Okay, so as you can see, it can be quite a challenging task to do. Bear in mind, what we have here are just 9 terms that we draw out from the 35 and to 40 terms of likelihoods for this exercise. What we're now going to do is we're going to present the results, and perhaps you can compare your answers to what we've got from our survey. Now let's start with slide 6 to look at the results. Slide 6 shows us that the results we got from our sample in Australia and Korea, the rankings are different. Further, the probability percentage put on the terms of likelihood are also different. For example, for virtually certain and reasonably certain, they are ranked differently in Korea and Australia. So there are 3 objectives for this research project, as listed on slide 8. If you can turn to slide 8, we'll see that the first objective of this research is looking at interpretation issues. The second objective is to learn more about translation issues. But more importantly, what we would like to achieve from this research is to highlight possible improvements on using terms of likelihood in standard setting. The objective is to enhance comparability of financial statements globally. I would also like to highlight that the research at this stage does not look at the determinants of differences on interpretation between 2 countries. This research does not examine what factors drive the differences between Korea and Australia. What we are going to do is we are going to look at, are there differences between Korea and Australia? If there are, what can we do to close the gap? If you look at slide 6, slide 10 gives us a bit of glimpse of the result. So what did we find? The sample we have collected so far shows us that there are differences on interpretation of terms of likelihood between Australian and Korean. Some terms of likelihood are interpreted differently in different contexts as opposed to liabilities. Interestingly, some terms of likelihood are not interpreted differently from each other. For example, unlikely and highly unlikely, which got us thinking, if they're not different, then perhaps standard setters should narrow down the expression of terms of likelihood. We also find that some terms are interpreted differently in different languages. Once the English terms are translated into Korean, it could be interpreted differently from the intended meaning. Lastly, the most challenging task in translation is that some English words cannot be translated to Korean. For example, virtually certain and reasonably certain are both translated into a single Korean term, but for many English speakers may see them slightly different from each other. I would now like to draw your attention to slide 11. Slide 11 is just a brief information about Korea and Australia. As mentioned, Australia and Korea adopted IFRS in 2005 and 2011. And both countries have different cultural backgrounds and legal systems. The graph on slide 9 is, the graph on slide 11 is the summary of cultural value we obtained from the Hofstede Research Center. They provide a list of cultural dimension data and measurements. As you can see, the cultural values are different between Australia and Korea in general. Now, as mentioned, this research does not examine whether cultural values are the drivers of differences in interpretation. There could be many other factors, for example, education or regulatory systems. But we think this is important to draw out because what we want to show is that there are some fundamental differences between two countries which could possibly to have an impact on the differences in interpretation of standards. Now, as mentioned, this is not a new research topic. Pro-literature has looked at this issue before. However, there's little research on interpretation of IFRS across jurisdictions since the widespread use of IFRS. And further to our knowledge, little has been done by the standard setters. And so we think it's important to look at this issue again. So I think that's all from me. I now pass over to Yang-Mi. Yang-Mi?
Yes, hello, many thanks, Eric. Let me continue to explain the research design of this project from page 13. We employed survey methods to collect data on the interpretation of terms of likelihood by two accounting professionals group, auditors and preparers of financial statements from each country. And we selected 14 different terms of likelihood and tried to design the questionnaire carefully to examine the issue from various aspects. The questionnaire was pre-tested with some accounting professionals as well as the CASB and AASB staff to increase understandability and readability for distributed to the respondents. Respondents were provided with the terms of likelihood only and terms of likelihood with relevant passages in IFRS to assist them in making their judgment respectively. And we have received two different estimates of the interpretations as follows. The range estimate of terms when not in context and point estimate of terms when in context, so that we could analyze the interpretation of terms in detail and provide more informative research results. In Australia, the survey was only available in English, whereas in Korea, one additional survey in Korean was also available with the purpose of testing translation issues as well. Both survey in English and Korean contained the same content, and the web-based survey link was sent out to the auditors and preparers in each country this September. If you look at page 14, we have identified about 32 different terms in IFRS and selected 14 of them to be examined in this research. And actually, we were recently informed that there are approximately 35 terms. The selected terms of likelihood are supposed to cover the range of probability levels from the highest to the lowest. If you look at the table in this slide, some English terms such as probable and likely are translated into a single Korean term, whereas there exists a case in which a single English term is translated into multiple Korean expressions, such as remote. So let me explain a bit more about this later in the findings part. And if you go to the next page, the total number of responses used in this preliminary test was 661, comprising 97 responses in Australia and 464 responses in Korea. And the demographics of the respondents are provided from page 15 to 17. If you look at page 17, as you can see that majority of the respondents answered that they are familiar with the terms of likelihood in IFRS, and most of respondents are aware of the importance of the terms of likelihood in IFRS. From page 18, we would like to explain some key findings from statistical analysis of the survey data. we first looked at the interpretation of terms by accounting professionals in Australia and Korea from the point of view of assigned rankings and numerical probabilities. Australian and Korean accounting professionals seem to assign different rankings on some terms, such as reasonably certain, which means that the perceived hierarchy of terms may differ in two countries. Also, some terms are not interpreted consistently to countries. For example, Australian accounting professionals assigned 28% on the term unlikely, whereas Korean accounting professionals' interpretation was 13% on average. If you go to the next page, page 19, on a scale from 0 to 100%, the results could be appeared like this. So from our test, 10 terms out of 14 here were found to be assigned with the different rankings in both countries. Additionally, 11 terms were interpreted inconsistently in numerical probabilities. Next, we looked at how same terms are interpreted in different contexts. We found that some terms could be interpreted different in different contexts. So if you see the table on page 20, in the case of asset recognition, respondents tend to be stricter when interpreting the same term probable when compared with the liability recognition case, as you can see. In case of remote, respondents are not likely to interpret terms symmetrically in different contexts as well. If you go to next page, page 21, we also conducted a test to see if some terms with seemingly similar meanings could be grouped together. So this produced five categories of terms with similar meanings. And reasonably assured and possible seem to have their own individual meaning. Even though not tested in this study, as these 14 terms may cover the full range of probability levels from the highest to the lowest, we guess more terms in between could be grouped together. And this result shows that some terms might be interchangeable with each other. We also tried to estimate the communication efficiency of terms of likelihood to see the level of consensus for interpreting each term. The communication efficiency was estimated in two ways. The spread of point estimate using standard deviation and the size of range estimate. Here, relatively small standard deviation are an indication that accounting professionals interpret these terms with a greater consensus of meaning. And the smaller the range, the mean, the greater the consensus regarding the interpretation of the terms. Here you can see that terms with the lowest communication efficiency based on the measure are highly unlikely and possible and reasonably possible in both countries. In other words, terms such as highly unlikely, possible, and reasonably possible do not seem to have great consensus when interpreted among accounting professionals. If you go to page 23, even though further work on translation is in progress, we would like to show you a glimpse of translation issues here today. Some of you here may have experienced the challenges to translate original IFRS in English to your own national language. So we hope that this would provide you a sketch of the issue. As you can see that there are three different pairs of terms of likelihood. For each pair of the English expressions, only one translated expression in Korean exists, suggesting that there could be some innate faulties in translation which may lead to different interpretations from the original English term. If you look at the results of interpretation here, you may notice that these are some examples of many translation issues that require attention. For example, the virtually certain and reasonably certain are translated into single Korean A. And still, we need to work on further. You can see that virtually certain might be more close to the Korean expression than reasonably certain in this case. And also, the interpretation of probable and likely vary greatly in two different languages. So these are the observations from the survey, and we are working on this issue now. Page 24 shows the results of narrative responses from survey. 162 respondents expressed their views on terms of likelihood in the survey, and most of the respondents noted that terms of likelihood are difficult to interpret. Some commented that there is lack of guidance on the concept of terms of likelihood, and there were concerns that terms of likelihood are not used consistently throughout the standards. And also, a number of respondents suggest that having so-called numerical guidance would be helpful. And some others suggest that terms of likelihood should be simplified and their number reduced. On page 25, we would like to make some key tentative recommendations to the ISB based on our findings as follows. First, standard setters should give considerable attention to how terms of likelihood might be interpreted and translated in different jurisdictions when developing standard. If you go to the next page, page 26, second recommendation is that standard setters should narrow the number of different terms of likelihood used in standards, unless the intended level likelihood are significantly different from each other. And some of the approaches employed in this research project, such as grouping of the terms and estimating the communication efficiency of terms, could be considered for your reference. If you go to the next page, page 27, if a set of accepted terms of likelihood were to be developed, the process should include consulting specialists, linguists who have familiarity with IFRS. The next page, the consideration should be given to develop principles and guidance on terms of likelihood that could be applied consistently across the standards, and the guidance could include examples. On page 29, the ISB deliberations of to the conceptual framework relating to neutrality and the asset and liability recognition criteria might be informed by the knowledge that many preparers and auditors factor in their own level of conservatism. And if you go to the page 30, standard setting outreach and consultative process should explicitly seek to obtain input on translation and interpretation issues in different jurisdictions. Well, we do understand that making some changes in existing terms should be approached very carefully. However, it may be necessary to pay attention to find ways to assist consistent interpretation of terms across jurisdictions in long and short terms. We guess if the ISB at least could provide a sort of hierarchy containing the original intended use of terms or a guidance suggesting it at certain ability level, it would be helpful to assist in the interpretation of terms as well as mitigate some translation issues. The project is in progress at the moment, and we are getting almost 700 responses from accounting professionals in Australia and Korea to date. And this is expected to be finalized in early 2016. I think it's from me, and thank you so much for listening.
Okay, thank you very much for this very clear presentation. As I said before, I was really struck by the number of terms that we apparently this is not even an exhaustive list. Part of it has to do with the richness of the English language. The terms likely and probable mean the same. One word has a French root and the other word has a German root, and that's that occurs a lot in the English language. So we should probably be a little bit more disciplined, and the idea of giving a ranking would also perhaps would also be
go the French way or the German way.
Otherwise, I didn't. I also thought that the results were not dramatic. The differences were there, but to my mind, they were not dramatic, but I would like to hear your opinion.
Sorry.
Yukio.
Thank you. We appreciate the great amount of effort devoted for joint work by the AWSB and CASB, and commend the development of this very informative paper. Before making our comment on this paper, let me explain the Japanese situation with regard to translation. Unlike Korea, voluntary use of IFRS is permitted in Japan, and Japanese entities are required to use the English version of IFRS. Our translation is made available purely for reference purposes. Hence, although the ASBJ is charged with translation of IFRS into Japanese, translation challenges is not so serious as those in Korea. Having said that, as we translate Japanese IFRS into Japanese language, although it is only a reference purposes, we frequently encounter difficulties of understanding and finding the right terms. Thus, we very much share sympathy with what the KSB is saying. Hence, we should like to suggest two models to ease translation. The suggestion is that concise sentence as possible. The longer the sentence, more difficult to translate. And the second suggestion is to avoid using similar but different words where it is unnecessary, and provide the definition of key terms so as to ensure common understanding. It would be helpful if the ISB develops a robust internal guideline that would help ensure the understanding. On the other hand, we disagree with some of the suggestions in this paper. The firstly, paragraph 8D of Agenda Paper 1 suggests there may be a possibility of departures with regard to the use of the specific term that relate to the likelihood. However, we do not think it's appropriate to permit departures once the likelihood is defined. Secondly, the paragraph 8E of Agenda Paper 1 stated that there are interactions between findings in this paper and discussions about neutrality and conservatism. However, as far as we have observed, we do not think there is direct relationship between the two. Thirdly, the paragraph 8F suggests seeking input on translation and interpretation issues in different jurisdictions in standard setting process. Although we generally agree with the usefulness of seeking input, we specifically suggest that the ISB identify those responsible for translation in each jurisdiction and set an explicit protocol to seek input from them before finalizing the standard setting process. We think that seeking input through the exposure draft is insufficient, and specifying the timing is very important. Lastly, we think that feedback from Korea stakeholders reflect the mixture of challenges in identifying the likelihood for each term in IFRS and the translation challenges therewith. Hence, although we think this study is very useful or helpful, it would be inappropriate for the ISB to start making a comprehensive changes to the word already used in the existing standards, as the impact is likely to be significant. Careful consideration should be warranted.
Patrick?
No, I had a question for clarification, which is in the study, has the notion under actuarial terminology been analyzed? In other words, actuaries use a lot, probable or likely, and so I'm wondering if there wouldn't be an element of guidance to be at least compared before concluding. The second question for clarification, so that's for our colleagues on the screen. For the first question, the second question is, have you linked it to the consequence? I mean, if you know the difference in terminology is one point, but what are the consequences that are drawn from a difference in perception of the meaning? Is also an interesting question that I had when reading the paper.
Linda?
Thanks. I found this paper extremely interesting and well done, and I had a couple of conversations about it before I came. In particular, I was interested in the fact that it led me, I think, to the same place Patrick was relative to how the difference in the interpretations driven by translation would lead to differing outcomes. And obviously, we care about the fact of comparability. That's why we want to have these standards used among, you know, jurisdictions around the world. So it really speaks to the outcome of applying the standards, which our board is spending a lot of time talking about. In Canada, we operate by law in two official languages. And as a board member for 8 years, I was blissfully ignorant of the issues that arise on translation. But as chair, I have become not blissfully aware of those issues, and I only deal with them to a fraction. Rebecca shoulders the vast majority of the work on that. So to start out with, we would certainly concur with the findings that it would be helpful, even in English, if you took a look at all the different terms and we could start over time to rationalize them. Because I don't think the differences, somebody thinking about whether, you know, virtually certain and the other terms are meaning the same thing or not meaning the same thing is actually not a productive use of anybody's time. So that would be helpful. And then when you add on translation, it's even more. And I looked in particular at the auditor responses. I thought it was interesting that there was a level of experience difference between the two countries. So I thought that was interesting. And as I talked to a couple of partners about this, I remember when I first came to Canada, we talked about virtually certain with regard to a certain Canadian tax issue, and everybody looked at me and said, well, aren't you stupid? Don't you know virtually certain means 90%? I mean, they knew it. I didn't know it, but that was pretty interesting. So this concept of the audit firms deciding that a certain term means a certain percentage is ingrained, certainly in practice in Canada. I can't believe we're all that different than other places around the world. And so we've got the historical stuff to deal with, but as well, there's a very topical issue that's going to take place very soon with regard to the deferral for the insurance insurers on IFRS 9. And I'm just saying that I'm already hearing what the number is, and you guys haven't even put out the official document. So interpretations are already taking place in that regard, so this is a very topical issue. So in my mind, as a standard setter, it just one of the questions I have for you folks is, what role does the ISB want to play in this? And are we content to have the Big Four set it, set the stage? Because that's what they're doing now. And in our country, it's not only the Big Four, but it's permeating down amongst the midterm firms. And we care about that as the standard setter who writes the standards for our private enterprise. So what happens here seems to be tearing out and is having quite a pervasive impact in terms of again, because we're focused on the outcomes of the standards, we think this is very, very important and a really interesting survey. So my kudos to the folks who did the work. Fantastic work. I think it's great. If you decide to do a second phase, Canada would be more than willing to participate because we have something to offer. And lastly, it's interesting because when we put IFRS 15 into French and we're getting it ready to pour it into our handbook, Rebecca came to see me to say that the translators have come across a whole host of terms. They now think they should go into existing standards and change to conform with what's in IFRS 15. I'm going out and time out. We're not going to change the translation of other standards that have been in our handbook for a number of years. So this is a huge issue. And so we're thinking about how to think about translation much earlier in the process to see if, you know, when you come out with an exposure draft, do we need to look at the translation issues there in order to comment on potential issues there in terms of terminology. So I think this is actually something that we should be working together on.
The Australians have no translation problems, at least I do not hope so. And if you say to an Australian, there's a 1 out of 4 chance that you will have an earthquake this year in Sydney, they say, oh, that's highly unlikely. I find it an amazing outcome. How can you say that highly unlikely is 1 out of 4? Can you explain, Chris?
She's in Melbourne.
I think the Koreans have it a lot better. Okay. Andreas.
Thanks, Hans. I think there are actually two issues. One is the issue of translation that has popped up, and I totally agree with that. The other one is on ranking the likelihood terms, and I think that's far more difficult than we believe, I suppose, because if we look at the list, it seems that there are not two individuals that really would come up with the same list. I mean, I find Eric's short piece quite interesting for the beginning of the session, because I looked into my 9 and they were different to the ones that I see in the presentation already. So if you probably did that with another 100 people, we've all come up with a different list. And I'm not sure whether narrowing down just the terminology would work, because if each of us, by culture, by background, by jurisdictional socioeconomic environment, assigns a different probability to each of these likelihood words, I mean, you can come up with a narrow list, but still assign a different meaning to that reduced list. The second thing that I observe is, this is just touching on likelihood. How about other things, yeah, like modifiers, amplifiers, different levels of commands that the languages use, shall, should, and all these things? I'm not sure whether these concepts really travel well from culture to culture. And so I echo what Linda was saying. You should be cognizant when you draft the standards already and taking these things on board. Now, you do have, obviously, board members from quite a diverse population and from other jurisdictions and cultures, but still, it doesn't really resolve the issue. So I think it's probably far more difficult than we believe it is to resolve. The next two comments that I would like to make is, it would be interesting to see how time constant any of these researches. So it may well be that now you've done the research and this is the list that you would now come up. So if you did the same study 10 years of now, would you still be coming up with the same list, or does the behavior and the perception change? And last but not least, owing to something that Patrick and Linda were saying, do our concepts of likelihood also work in other areas, in other sections, in other sectors? So if you applied the same constants, say, in philosophy or in medicine or in natural sciences, or what, would they still be working? So I think it's a first step to really highlight how important it is to use fuzzy terms and try to assign a numerical percentage to it. But I wonder whether we could really succeed in making this work once and for all.
Peter.
Thanks. I found this extremely interesting, both for the topic itself and I think for the general idea of doing this kind of research. So I'd like to encourage other people to do it. The thing that struck me, I think, first of all, I think everybody's known for a long time that there are too many terms relating to likelihood in IFRS, and it is not a new issue, but the paper does provide some useful documentation of that. I was actually a bit surprised how small the differences are in most cases. That there are a few outliers, but mostly they're actually fairly close. One thing I think the paper probably overstates is the significance of the difference, because it talks about statistical significance, but actually on quite small differences in the means. And I think the economic significance is actually going to be quite small. I think any difference in interpretation between 60% and 65% is going to be dwarfed by the difficulty of coming up with the estimates in the first place. One thing I'd have liked to see more of, I think, is in this asymmetry between assets and liabilities, if you like, or debits and credits, where there's some interesting evidence there. And it would have been interesting for the team to dig a bit more into that. You've looked at the means and you've given the standard deviations for the individual variables, but you've not done the comparison. It would have been interesting to see the whole distribution of the differences. If everybody is 10% different, that tells you one thing. If the range is a difference of minus 20% to plus 60%, that tells you something completely different. So I'd have liked to have seen more on that. My other comment is that I think the paper is probably doesn't look enough at the context where some of these things are applied. So I looked down the list of the likelihood terms, and some of them aren't actually about likelihood at all. So one of the terms there is substantially all. That's not used in IFRS to refer to likelihood in any place, as far as I can see. Highly likely, I think, is possibly in one place. I didn't finish looking at that, but certainly everywhere else, it's not used as a term of likelihood. Extremely unlikely, I know, is not. It's only in one place, and I was the person who wrote it in there. And it was put in a place where we wanted to say there is no threshold anywhere in the spectrum, and so we deliberately picked a point that wasn't used as a threshold anywhere. And so that is not actually used for any purpose in IFRS. It's telling you not to do something. It's not telling you to make a distinction. So I think it would be worth looking at those terms again and see whether they really are used as likelihood. The other point on terminology, the paper talks about a term more likely. I assume that meant more likely than not. And that's an interesting case study, I think, because more likely than not is precisely defined, but I think it's a very opaque term to most people when they first come across it, and you actually have to explain it to them. Once you explain it, it's obvious, but it needs explaining first.
Mary?
Like others, I found the papers very, very challenging, very interesting. I think a lot of good lessons for us. One thing I'd encourage is in finalizing the paper to, I was trapped between the old and the new slide deck here, and I think the changes that you made in the final slide deck had some very useful graphic capture of the significance of some of the data. And so encourage you in finalizing the paper to use some of the summaries that you produce for the final slide deck, like, for example, that thermostat and some of the cross mapping. So that's about finalizing the paper. One thing, a question that I have for ASAF members, some members have already said, you know, what they think consequences, lessons are for us. But I think I would find it helpful to hear more generally, what do you think we should do about this? And by that, do you think it's awareness, protocols, disciplines regarding drafting going forward? Is it a project that tries to rank the, you know, maybe subject to some of Peter's comments about filtering out, you know, which ones really are the probability? Is there a project to at least rank them? Because Yukio, I take your point about not starting to make lots of changes to the terms, but would it even help to try and pull them together, and as that thermostat slide did, or should we undertake a project to try and rationalize on fewer terms, even though that could have lots of consequences for lots of standards? And it's, I think, to me, part of the stable platform, you know, issue. So I'd be interested, if not today, as people respond, for example, to the agenda consultation, even, you know, thinking about something like this, where do you put this in terms of priorities beyond some of the lessons that you've been focusing on in terms of do better going forward?
Dan Chow?
First of all, I also think that the research project, you know, done by the WSB and KSB was, I think it's wonderful and it's excellent. And we all know that IFRS is principle-based. So if we want to result in same judgment, accounting judgment, you know, based on same transaction, I think we do need clear terms, clear definition in place in order to have this kind of result happen. So I, as non-English speaking countries, I also agree with the honor's point that translation issue should be raised at earlier stage. Even when we introduce different terms, we have to think about these kind of terms can be understood in different languages as what we want to them to understand, and also can be translate exactly what we want to provide, you know. So if we look at some of the issues arising from the accounting judgment, even in China, actually some of the different judgments made because of translation, not because of our standards. So we need some solution to resolve these kind of problems. Actually, translation is not simply with regard to the likely hold terms or something like that. All the other new terms, such as when we introduced IS 36 into China, there is a new term, cash generated unit. It's really difficult for us to translate into Chinese. And also, when we look at the IFRS 13, there is a new term, unit of account. Unit of account is also very difficult for us to translate. So if we want word-by-word adoption in different jurisdictions, because we cannot find exactly what kind of word in Chinese there or different language there, so I think this objective is very difficult to achieve. So at earlier stage, I think we do need clear terms, especially when we introduce new terms, whether there are any, we can exactly find a new term in different languages there. So this is I think is a big problem. So come back to this project, I agree with the suggestion made that, first of all, whether it's possible for us to narrow the numbers of different terms of likelihood we use. Secondly, when we use the different terms, can we clearly define them as the first stage, such as the suggestion made that we can using, you know, to have percentage ranges to define different terms. Clearly, even we use likely or probably, maybe we use different terms, but we clearly define what kind of percentages, ranges, you know, they mean. And then it's easy for us to apply, to make a judgment based on our terms and especially our clear definition using percentage ranges to define them. And also it is very easy to resolve the conflict between preparers and auditors as well as regulators, because different stakeholders maybe have different accounting measurement, But we use unified, you know, percentage ranges. Maybe it's easier for them to, you know, to reach a uniform result.
Just to, I guess, make a practical point and a little bit picking up on what Mary said and also some of Andreas's comments. I think when we sit in a meeting like this, which is dedicated to thinking about the use of language, it's extremely easy to agree, yes, we should all spend a lot more time thinking about language as we develop standards. The reality is that I think it would be challenging to do that, and we're not renowned already for the speed with which we do things. If we add in lots of translation elements, this is obviously another time factor to think about. So I think we need to somehow make it easy for ourselves. You know, in the world of derivatives and hedge counting, we use the phrase critical terms when we think about matching. Not an analogy at all, but that phrase critical terms might be a useful thing. Maybe we should be thinking about the critical terms within a particular standard or across a number of standards and boil it right down, and it might be a relatively limited number of words which we try to get absolute commonality on. If we try to do it across the whole standard, we will just get bogged down time-wise.
But just to add on to you, few people have suggested as part of the process checking on the translation. So Japan, Yukio would have said we should go out directly to all the translators. Yeah. Others have said, you know, the exposure draft time might be a good time. I wonder whether even a direct question on exposure drafts, you know, are there terms that are difficult to translate or understand, or, you know, something like that that would give us an earlier signal as to what's going on.
So if I can just comment on that, Ian. So when we go for our endorsement process and we put it out there, we put a standard out in both languages. And so we've been talking about, is that a point of capture for us? When the translators are doing the translation of the exposure draft, could we put a point in our process where we go to them and say, did you have any particular problem? These are very experienced translators who have translated all of IFRS as it came into Canada. So we're looking at a capture point there, and if you put a question there, that would reinforce us doing that.
Kim?
Thanks, Hans. Also found this research very interesting, and yeah, without repeating a lot of the comments that have already been made, I mean, what's interesting is while there may not necessarily be huge distinction, let's say, within Australia between auditors and preparers, what I think will be very interesting is probably to look at other English-speaking countries and how they compare. So even though we're talking about translation into, you know, other languages other than English, I would imagine that many countries could have differences even where English is effectively their predominant language, and it probably stems from culture. And, you know, maybe the local standards or terminology. I mean, we often, you know, talk about just everyday language, how, you know, terms are used differently. So I certainly think, you know, picking up on the points around having principles-based standard, having comparability, there needs to be a way of you know, trying to limit the use of words, particularly if there's an acknowledgement which says, well, actually, these two words are the same. Well, then why not just pick one of them and just use one of them, because they might be interpreted differently. I mean, just as an example, when I looked at this, like reasonably assured and certain, you know, I probably would have said assured was, yes, it's definite, whereas I see, for example, here there is a fair difference between the two. And I agree, I think probably a lot of time is then spent trying to analyze this, never mind just trying to understand the concept. So, yeah, I mean, as difficult as it might be, I certainly support limiting the number of words used. I mean, as Hans, you said, you know, the English language is quite rich, but, you know, do we really want to have all those nuances if we think that something is the same, just use, you know, that it's probable, if that's what we mean, as opposed to using other words which might have a similar meaning, but in some jurisdictions, they might believe it's completely different. So,
Françoise?
Well, first of all, I would like to echo the compliments for the study and recommend that, in fact, there are two different lessons to be learned. There is the selection of the terms in the standards, and there is the translation. And it would be a pity if the one, I mean, if the two went out as a translation issue. And the two should be looked at separately with different lessons learned. It's difficult to make recommendations as to what exactly, I mean, responding to Mary's question is very difficult because in the absence of insights into our different outcomes we have today in practice, it's difficult to make recommendations. But it might be helpful at least that the ISB establishes a relative ranking of those terms that are used, maybe identify those that are used with the intention of having the same meaning, if that's the case, but not without having some insights into how things have been applied. We would, however, we would be seeing the ISB moving away from a principle-based set of standards if there was ever a table with some percentages, and particularly having in mind what Peter said, you know, when those terms are used, there is such a level of uncertainty anyway, that having any form of numerical identification would probably not be the right thing to do.
Tom?
I found this whole thing very interesting and troublesome. Partly I find it troublesome that we, first of all, have so many terms. And I don't think the human mind or judgments and decisions by humans can differentiate likelihood into 35 different categories. I think that's ridiculous to think that we want to be able to do that. And I also find it disturbing that to deal with these words, what we do is translate them into specific numbers. Because if you think about it, the difficulty is taking an uncertain event, transaction, or circumstance and trying to say whether or not it's probable or not. And I don't think saying 75% is probable is going to help in those commonality in those judgments, because it's very difficult to decide whether it's even 75%. So I agree with Francoise that the selection of terms is a big issue. And I would think that we all ought to take it as a challenge to standard setters is how many different gradations of likelihood do we think people can make reasonable judgments about from 0 to 100%? And I have it very, instead of fighting about whether 91-90 versus 88 interpretations are the right order or not, how many different gradations can we expect someone to make? Is it out of 4? That might be a little high, I don't know. But I think that's the better question to ask in the select and narrow it down to whatever number we have, and then consistently use the same term for that grouping of likelihood. And while I like this study, I think it needs to go further, because what I think I'd like to know is, given a term and a particular judgment, how much commonality does somebody have about that judgment as exceeding that term level or not? And that might be a cultural issue that it makes it more challenging. If there's been an earthquake more recently in your country, you may think it's more probable or more likely than if it hasn't been for a period of time. And I don't think we're ever going to take that out of the system. But I think more likely is to say, once we group those terms into 3, 4, 5 categories at most, then test out of that grouping of terms in that category which one gets the most common judgment across the world about that likelihood. And that might be the most productive way to be able to decide what term to use within that grouping to get commonality in judgments within the reporting system. And I'd encourage the researchers to think about doing that. Picking a word that more commonly is judged the same way for common events or circumstances we're making likelihood assessments about in the literature. And I think that would be a very positive contribution, to being able to write that forward. Mary, I think that's a separate research project. And it, once we end up saying that there's whatever number of categories it is, and all of these are within that category, starting to pick the one that results in the most same common judgment around jurisdictions in the world, and letting people know that we think that all those other terms that were similar to it are about the same, but without necessarily going back and rewriting everything until it moves forward.
Now, Tuck and Wego are going to explain us how often they warn the board against translation issues and how few times we listen carefully.
Thank you. Just in response to Tom's comment, if you look at page 14 of this slide, research design, there is a table of translation and English and Korean. And if you look at carefully the Korean side, the first four characters are same in 11 words in Korean. So it means it's pronounced kanusun. I'm correct. It's same as the kanosei in Japanese, and we share the same word in Chinese, and it means possibility. So it means it's a matter of degree of possibility. Possibility of 0% to possibility of 100%. So the Korean language is, in a sense, a little more logical than English. They put the same.
I've always thought it.
Yeah. Possibility and put the degrees. So then, if you try to put an order, we can simply use the word possibility only, or kanusun only, and the kanusun number 1 to number 14. So that makes the order very clear. But I don't think it would work. Because accounting standard is not mathematics. It's more literature. Accounting standard is not a science. It's more like a kind of art. So therefore, we have a variety of language and provide subtle differences for everybody to understand the differences. Of course, there would be a lot of judgment. However, if we simplify the language too much, then that makes a little bit strange outcome. It may work in the digital world, but it's not the digital world. So therefore, I think translation is difficult, but I think it's more important thing is each jurisdiction accounting standard setter or auditors or accounting professionals try to interpret it and try to communicate more like this is more important than put the numeric order. So we are going to make great effort from now on, and the effort we can make is try to avoid the variety of too many words. But at the same time, each jurisdiction have to make an effort to understand what the literature means. Thank you.
I also find the research very interesting, particularly because Korea, Japan, and China, we are in the same language tradition zones, and I feel the board should be very, very aware of such kind of issues, not only in this area, but in some other areas. And every time when we use terms, we have to think about whether it is necessary, applicable, and whether it will result in inconsistent applications. And I find a few examples, and I challenge the drafting quite often when, as a board member, comment on the drafting of our final documents. For example, as a minimum, whether it is necessary in most cases, and secondly, in sufficient detail, and we are going to finalize the final amendment to 7 on the debt reconciliation. In this disclosure part, we use the term insufficient detail, and I challenge the staff. I say it is necessary because we have another paper discuss about materiality guidance, and in a particular disclosure requirement, or in many other disclosure requirements, we use different terms. And as I said, whether it is necessary and whether it is applicable and whether it will result in consistent application. And in some many other areas, we use significant. And similarly, we have to challenge ourselves whether it is necessary, applicable, and whether it will result in consistent application. During the LSG meeting 2 weeks ago in Seoul, and many of the member countries said they want to follow the research methodology to have a similar questionnaire research in their country. And I remember a few of them. I'm not sure whether the other member countries of SF feel similar, you know, needs in the relatively wide, you know, area, not only in the LSG jurisdictions. I think LSG jurisdictions feel useful is because the varieties of language in the regions are much more obvious than in other regions. And the question to the member is whether it is useful to have a similar research, you know, in other jurisdictions.
You? I just want to pick up on Tom's words, and I agree. I think in general, the use of bright lines in a principles-based accounting world is not sensible. I think a little bit depends what you're talking about, though. I mean, when you talk about the probability of an event, completely agree. If you take our predominant threshold on the insurance front, which we'll be talking about later, it's not the probability of event. What are the percentage of liabilities you need to hold in order to qualify? And we want to communicate that is quite a big number, or a high percentage, and therefore it is a different thing. I can see in that case, having the number actually does make some sense, or to signal that it's a high hurdle. But I think, and so going back to the probability of event type thing, I think the value is in qualitatively trying to articulate the boundaries rather than say it's X percent. So,
Presenters still want to, we're coming to the end of this discussions. Would you like to make any comments on what you've heard? That's not the case. Gian?
Okay, first of all, thank you for your very useful comment for this project. As you can see, this project has two issues. One is interpretation issue, and the other one is translation issue. At first time, when we started this project, we focused on interpretation issue. The research question is whether the cultural differences impact on the interpretation of the terms of likelihood between the Australia and the Korea. While we are performing this the project, we found that the translation is as important as the interpretation issues.
Yeah.
So two issues, the problem is two issues is not independent of each other. It's very closely mixed. So in this project, the population is Australia and Korea, so it is very difficult to interpret the result of the survey because the interpretation issue and translation issues are mixed in the result. So in the future, I think I would like to suggest to expand this research, the project on interpretation issue and the project on the translation issues. The interpretation issues I think for the English-speaking countries, for translation issues, for the countries need to translate the IFRS into their own languages. So anyway, we are going to finalize this project until the at the beginning of next year.
Okay.
And I hope the IASB considers this project as a future project.
Okay, well, so we look forward to the final product. What we've seen thus far looks very promising, and that gives us a lot of food for thought. I find it difficult to indicate right now what we should do with it. Something, probably. I found Ian's suggestion very simple and could be helpful in exposure draft to ask a specific question: do you foresee any translation problems, and if so, where, and where, how can we help? That would be a very simple one to bring forward. When I look at all these terms, I think most of us feel that there are too many of them, and that it might be a good effort to try to rationalize them, but then without upsetting all the standards at the same time. So that's a difficult one to weigh. At the same time, I reiterate, and I think some of us repeated that too, I don't think it is terribly upsetting what we have seen here. I mean, yes, there are differences, but they are the kind of differences that are not totally surprising. But hopefully we can narrow the range of differences going forward. Okay, thank you very much for this interesting discussion. Thank you for the presenters in both Seoul and Australia. Let's take a break till 10 to 11.